Ann and I got our first vacuum as a wedding present when we were married in 1993. It was in a Eureka World Vac. I remember, yep. That vacuum actually lasted us about 15 years. But I also opened a restaurant. And at the restaurant, I would buy vacuums, the cheapest, sturdy vacuum that I could find. And about once a year, I'd have to replace it. I'd just wear it out. One time when I wore out the one that was at the restaurant, I made the mistake of bringing the World Vac to the restaurant, and that was the end of the World Vac. So we had to get another one, and the next vacuum we bought was one of those new bagless type. And we had that for about 10 years. And that has served us well until just about a year ago. I can't remember exactly when it was, but before we moved to a new home and this last summer, but we have a new vacuum. And so this is number three, for the house or whatever. 1974, James Dyson bought a brand new Hoover vacuum. And he was quickly disappointed by how much it sucked. I mean, or didn't suck, or you know what I'm saying. James had recently designed a new air cleaning system for a huge sawmill operation, and he set about to apply the same technology on a much smaller scale to a vacuum. And he tinkered away for a number of years in his garden shed. He created 5,127 prototypes of the first Dyson bagless home-use vacuum before he got it right. Dyson said there were 5,126 failures, but I learned from each one, and that's how I came up with a solution. So I didn't mind failure. It took someone from outside the vacuum industry, one built on selling you vacuum bags, with ideas that had never been tried before and a determination to learn from every mistake to recreate the vacuum. 35 years after Dyson vacuums first hit the market, Ann and I now own a Dyson vacuum. And let me tell you, it sucks. Really good. Last Sunday, our reading from Mark was in the second chapter. Jesus' early ministry had primarily been about healing, and word was spreading quickly in the Galilean countryside. Jesus had a few disciples and a crowd of followers, and that was growing rapidly. These followers were forced to start thinking creatively as a result. Like the story we had last week about the paralytic and his friends whose determination led them to cutting a hole in the roof and lowering the paralytic down to Jesus on a mat. Jesus was starting to build his movement, and his followers clearly were reimagining what it means to be the church. This Sunday, Jesus turns from healing to teaching, or more specifically, telling stories. In particular, Jesus begins employing parables to help his followers understand God's vision for the world and how he, in particular, will help bring it into focus. The parables we listened to today about seed and soil and lamps and mustard bushes all demonstrate something important about the reign and realm of God and how God's people are to be a part of it all. These stories from Mark's fourth chapter and these stories today that we heard are from the fourth chapter, and if last week's stories were from the second chapter, Well, that begs the question, what happened in the third chapter? I'm glad you asked. In the third chapter, Jesus looks around at his growing collection of followers, and he chooses 12 of them to be appointed as his apostles. Apostles meaning ones who are sent, the ones who are going to go do this ministry that Jesus is modeling. Mark names the 12 for us, and we recognize 4 of them from the scene in chapter 1 where Jesus offers to teach 4 fishermen how to fish for people. Simon, who he gave the name Peter, good name, and his brother Andrew, James and John, these are the sons of Zebedee, Mark tells us, and Mark takes pain to point out that Jesus gave James and John the coolest disciple nicknames there are. They're called the Sons of Thunder. Like, don't you want to be one of the Sons of Thunder? Now, to these 4, we add Philip, Bartholomew, Matthew, Thomas, another James, Thaddeus, another Simon, this one the Canaanean, and finally, Judas Iscariot, who Mark says dismissively, right up front, the one who betrays him. Beyond the 4 fishermen, Mark gives us no additional background on the other 8. The other gospel writers offer little more as well, so we're left to wonder and theorize about their backstories and why Jesus picks this particular collection of people to be appointed for ministry in this new thing that God is doing. We can make assumptions about their class. It's likely that they were tradespeople, perhaps also fishermen or shepherds or carpenters or bakers or vineyard workers. It's also safe to assume something they were not. They weren't part of the existing religious order or the church establishment. Yes, they were Jews and they had been brought up in the faith, but my point here is to say that Jesus chooses his new partners in ministry for the gifts that they have that are undeniably apart from the religious tradition. Jesus didn't want to work with Bible scholars or academics. He didn't choose his followers from the church insiders or those schooled in the established ways. Jesus went outside the box because Jesus needed to redesign, reinvent, recreate the church. There's a company called IDEO. It was founded in the early days of the tech boom in Palo Alto, California. They're a design and consulting firm, and they work with clients from an extremely diverse set of industries to redesign products and even systems or experiences or environments. In a word, IDEO helps companies and organizations innovate. Designers from IDEO developed the first mouse used on the original Apple Macintosh computer. If you've ever worked with a computer mouse, you have the folks at IDEO to thank. Now, not all of their projects are quite so life-changing. I have a cousin who worked for IDEO for a few years, and he described a project where they helped redesign a toilet brush. My cousin has a mechanical engineering background, which is kind of makes sense for someone in a design firm. But his colleagues included artists and musicians and philosophers, and accountants, and analysts, and economists, and the list goes on. What makes IDEO so good at redesigning products and systems and environments is that they're a group of people with diverse backgrounds, and interested in experimenting in new ways to find solutions not yet imagined. I think that's the very same criteria that Jesus used when he selected the disciples. I also think that's why you being here today is incredibly important to fulfilling the vision that God has for the world. It's not because you're a particularly gifted Bible scholar, although some of you are. It's not because you're a church insider with some special knowledge of how things work best in this place, though your past experiences can be very helpful. You're here today because you're an accountant or an economist or a parent or a student or a truck driver or a nurse or a school teacher or a neighbor or a veteran or any number of things that can bring a diversity of experience to bear on the work that we are all called to do. You are fishermen about to reinvent the tasks of gathering and feeding and sending. And you are exactly what God needs to redesign, to reinvent, and to recreate the church. What can be said about this particular church, this expression of church, the one known as Prince of Peace in Roseville, Minnesota? Well, what can be said about a church that calls a pastor who's a former restaurateur, and another who's a former attorney and an airport administrator? What can be said about a church that has a rockin' band this week and an organist that rocks on all the others? What can be said about a church that supports emerging ministry through a micro-granting process run by the grantees? What can be said about a church that comes together regularly to do things intergenerationally, because that's a better expression of who we are? What can be said? Well, how about God is surely at work in this place, making all things new? If there's any doubt, I am here to proclaim that this church has some really good soil. And not just in the community garden next to our parking lot, right here in this worship space. God is doing something amazing right here and with each one of you. I'm so glad that you are here for today's experiment of being the church together. We have another prototype in development, and we need your ideas to help us innovate. Yes, it is likely that not everything we will try will work out perfectly. Failure is okay. In fact, failure is holy. It's in the failure where we discover the next new possibility. And don't worry, if we make a mess of things, well, I've got just the thing to clean it up.